manufacturing a little positive.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the morning open, and we're 21 minutes into the trading day. There's already some reaction from some of the events of the morning. The Commerce Department says U.S. orders for big ticket items, cars, machinery, fell by 0.8% in March, but that was far less than analysts thought would be the case. Word is from Ford today that losses topped $1.4 billion there, but that's good news. It's also a lot less than expected. And elsewhere in Detroit, Chrysler has a government deadline of next Thursday. To survive with Uncle Sam's help, it has to restructure or file for bankruptcy. Published reports this morning say they will likely do just that. And with that, where's Wall Street? Dow is up about 0.5% at this hour, 51 points. NASDAQ up 0.5%. S&P 500 up about 0.75%. European shares up by more than 2.5%. And Asian markets closed mixed today. On the line with us live from St. Louis is Julie Neiman from Smith Moore & Company. Julie, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Julie, we got word this morning that orders for durable goods merely slipped but didn't plummet, as had been the case. What does that tell us about the overall economy?
Well, economists have been forecasting the worst possible case scenario, and of course the market's rallying when it's not as bad as they've been anticipating. They're hoping here that the manufacturing plunge could be nearing an end, but bottom line is there's no recovery, even if we do hear the thud right at the bottom here.
So not a bottom just yet.
No, it's not. You know, what we saw today was a nice uptick in commercial and military aircraft, but big negatives in automotive, appliances, and probably the key thing is businesses are not expanding and updating, so you're seeing negative results in machinery and computers. That's where you have to see the uptick.
You saw automotive, of course, Ford reporting this morning that that there was a decline, a loss. Their shares are up 17% because that wasn't as bad as Wall Street had expected, right?
Well, and it looks like they may be the only one who doesn't declare bankruptcy. They're even anticipating that they could break even in 2011, whereas Chrysler, the big basket case, is preparing for bankruptcy, and it looks like General Motors will as well. In fact, Canada is even preparing debtor-in-possession financing to take care of the bankruptcy and usher them through it.
You know, Julie, we've got Treasury's Tim Geithner talking about bank stress tests today. How did financials react to all of that?
Well, the whole question is, how much are you really going to disclose? It looks like they're only going to be talking about the methodology. What we won't know is what anything but the gross numbers happen to be out there. The banks that are in trouble basically have to raise funds in the Fed if they tell them that it's necessary. I don't know that I'd really want to invest my remaining few coins into the losers, distress situations. So I think what you're going to see with the banks, a lot of shotgun marriages here.
All right. Julie Neiman, thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. Of course, we're talking about Wall Street today and the bank stress tests, and the Treasury Secretary Geithner is expected to lay out what went into those tests, and executives from the nation's largest banks will hear just how stressed they are. The latest from Mitchell Hartman.
The exams are confidential, and Treasury officials say no one will fail, but banks that get a low pass may have to explain how they'll boost their balance sheets. Paul Miller is managing director at FBR Capital Markets.
Anybody who is perceived to have to raise capital, the market will look at those companies saying those companies failed the stress test.
Miller says those banks will come under significant pressure to disclose more about their finances to offset investor fears. Bill Brown teaches law at Duke. He used to be a managing director at Morgan Stanley. He says Treasury isn't likely to force troubled banks to open their books entirely and expose themselves to the world.
The banks have tried to keep the kimono closed totally. And at this point, the government's focused on opening up just a little bit. But again, we're not going to see everything under the kimono.
Congress may have different ideas. Lawmakers may insist on full and frank disclosure from those banks that ask for more taxpayer money. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Listening to the Morning Report on Friday, April 24th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Finance ministers from around the world are in Washington, D.C. today, kicking off a weekend of economic talks. First, the G7 will meet, then the G20. The International Monetary Fund and World Bank have meetings planned as well. A big question, how large a role the IMF will play in pulling the global economy out of recession. Here's Tamara Keith.
When the global economy started crashing, managing director Dominique Strauss-Kahn says the IMF stepped in like a firefighter.
During this period, I do believe that the IMF did deliver.
Earlier this month at the G20 meeting in London, leaders decided to give the IMF $500 billion to lend out to countries in need, boosting its funding and relevance. Strauss-Kahn says the money isn't all in yet, but he thinks it will come by the end of the year.
We already have a lot of pledges, and I believe that during the spring meeting, some new one may come.
I believe it when I see it.
Mark Weisbrot is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research and a critic of the IMF.
They're twisting a lot of countries' arms to try and get them to put up money. Even some of the European countries have reservations.
Weisbrot says the IMF is in need of reform. One problem, he says the conditions it puts on the countries it lends to end up hurting their economies rather than helping. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
In California, air regulators yesterday adopted a mandate requiring low-carbon fuels. It's the first state in the nation to do that officially. And it's part of California's wider effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The standards are expected to create a new market for alternative fuels. There's already a market for new ways to make energy, and a lot of it is out of this world. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Jennifer Collins.
California law requires utility companies to get a fifth of their electricity from renewable sources by 2012. So Pacific Gas and Electric has come up with one project that's pretty far out. Spokesman Jonathan Marshall.
To send satellites up into space with huge solar panels, gather the energy, and then send it back to Earth via radio waves.
Basically, they'd beam solar energy back to Earth and then feed it into PG&E's grid. Sounds kind of like a movie that's coming out in a few weeks. The plan is to have those spacey solar panels orbiting the Earth within 7 years. They generate enough electricity to power 240,000 homes. Monique Hannis is with the Solar Energy Industries Association. She says the satellite project could make solar power more expensive and...
We feel that there's so much that can be done right now to capture solar power right here on Earth.
PG&E says solar panels in space would provide much more electricity than the ones on Earth do. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
So, are you a Beatles fan? As the years go by, more and more hits are slipping into the golden oldies category. This week, the European Union Parliament took an initial vote towards extending copyrights on recordings. The measure increases copyright protections for performance artists from 50 years to 70. Christopher Worth reports.
The move is a victory for icons of the British invasion. The copyright on recordings like the Beatles hit, Love Me Do, would expire in 3 years under existing law. But Paul McCartney would still receive some royalties because he not only performed the 1962 hit, he also wrote it. The work of a writer or composer is protected for a lifetime, plus 70 years after death. But as Jonathan Ratcliffe of Nabarro explains, there are a lot of people in the music industry that don't have that extra income.
The kinds of rights that are falling out of protection from the 50s and 60s were performed by people who at that time typically didn't usually write the music and the lyrics. They simply performed them.
That leaves aging British rockers like Cliff Richard in a tough position. He became a star with hit singles he didn't actually write, like 1959's Living Doll. The song's copyright expires this year. Richard was among those who campaigned hard for the changes that will ensure those royalty checks keep showing up. But critics say the move will do more for record companies to continue raking in profits on old contracts. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
So it's not news that retail sales are lousy right now, but what is news is what some stores are doing to get customers in. Cash Peters reports on one retail strategy that should come with a designated driver.
Is this the daftest thing ever? Serving drinks in clothes stores to lure in business. Gina Blancati is manager of Lisa Klein Men in West Hollywood, where the celebrities shop.
we're not trying to lure their business. We're just trying to keep them happy and comfortable and just extend that extra thing to them.
Ooh, extra thing. I love extra things. But a mojito while you're trying on a pair of pants?
It's either mojitos or margaritas or maybe a simple beer.
If a celebrity comes in, right, and they try on a bunch of clothes, the moment they leave, do you run over and sniff them?
No, I can't say I do.
You see, I would.
Oh.
That's the first thing I'd do.
Yeah, I think you should stay out of retail.
Candice Buenrostro there. She's their barmaid. But good service in stores has been absent for quite a while, have you noticed? Now, thanks to the recession, the customer, that's us, is king again.
You're right, it's this economy, it's really... you can't predict anything.
That's Christina Lazaro of the Blue Jean Bar in Santa Monica. It's a clothes shop with a happy hour. Their extra thing is wine and beer for anyone, even if you don't buy anything. Natasha Pia.
You don't have to try on jeans in order to get a free drink.
I'm cheap enough that I would come in and just drink your wine and leave and never buy the jeans.
That's fine.
Oh yeah, right, sure it is. Problem is, happy hour was a disaster. When I got there, the shop was empty. I blame the wine.
Oh my God. How many weeks has this been sitting here? Wow, you obviously picked the real top of the line wine.
But what do I know? In the end, we had to stand in the street heckling people.
Would you like some free wine?
Oh, no.
She said no.
But then Christina saved the day. The nail salon next door was full of people who looked like they urgently needed to get hammered.
Hi, everyone. Just so you know, next door at the Blue Jean Bar, we have happy hour and we have free wine and beer and 10% off of all jeans.
Would you come next door for free wine?
Yes.
You would?
Maybe.
There's also a six-pack if you want one.
All right, then I'll come.
Beer. It's the answer to every question ever asked. In Santa Monica, California, I'm Cash Peters for Marketplace.
Spring is here, and that means love is in the air. Time to fire up those house bands and pop the wedding bubbly. All part of the nuptial costs that average about 28 large right here in the United States. These days, though, many couples are scaling back, as Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Here comes 2009's more frugal bride and groom. Lindsay Walschlager and her fiancé Justin Johnson had planned a reception at an art center in Red Wing, Minnesota. The cost? $3,000 even before the food. The more they thought about it...
Why should we mortgage our future on one day, given the uncertainty of everything?
Instead, they opted for something simpler.
And our favorite campground in the world is in Lake City, Minnesota. And it's right on the shores of Lake Pepin, and it's just gorgeous.
And the covered dining hall overlooking the lake is pretty cheap.
I talked to the campground, and I can rent that for $200, and it already has the tables, it already has chairs, it already has tablecloths.
Lindsay's parents are sharing the cost, but her mother works at a company that's seen several rounds of layoffs lately. That's making everyone more worried about money, and it's prompted Lindsay to downsize the wedding. Millie Martini-Bratton is editor of Brides magazine. She says the recession gives couples a perfect opportunity. They can focus on what they really want in a wedding, and that extends to the guest list.
Right now, it's a little easier to tell people, gee, I'd love to have you come, but I really am on a tight budget, because in reality, everybody is.
Bratton says businesses from venues to florists are ready to negotiate. Brandon Powers is a photographer in southern Georgia. Couples started haggling with him over his package deals earlier this year, so he introduced a la carte pricing.
And I haven't seen, you know, a big change in how much people are spending. They're not necessarily spending less. They just want to make sure that what they're spending their money on are the things that they absolutely want.
He says he's working a lot more do-it-yourself weddings.
Clients and friends and family members of the clients are taking on more of the responsibilities that were done by professionals in the past.
He's seeing fewer videographers, fewer bands, and more iPods. That's all fine with bride-to-be Lindsay Walschlager.
You know, at the end of the day, a wedding is about bringing two families together and celebrating it with the people that you're closest to, and it doesn't need to be more than that.
Even if her future in-laws are still getting used to the idea of a reception at a campsite. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Hope you can join us at our website, where you can find the Scratchpad, our online blogger. Scott Jagow is there as well. Marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.